Let's just say, let's give you the visual. Let's say I really like coffee. I like coffee so much. I'm afraid Jamar might come through this phone and come and take it from me. And now I've destroyed, and if you're listening to the podcast, you can't see me doing this visual, but I'm holding a coffee cup and I'm squeezing it really tight. If I were to keep going, the coffee cup is either it's going to burst from the bottom or squeeze out from the top and I lose my coffee. It actually literally just came out onto my pants because I wasn't handling the cup properly. I wasn't naturally drinking from my cup because I have fear that if I lose this coffee cup, something really bad is going to happen. And that's essentially what we do in relationships. Codependent people are so nice and so controlling. So nice and so controlling. And we try to squeeze this relationship. I need it to go my way. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Boundaries and Grace. My name is Taylor Chandler, and I'm your host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I help people break negative relationship cycles. This episode is about codependency. This is such a major key in understanding and then breaking your negative cycles, especially if you find yourself on the insecurely attached side. All right? So I'm going to leave it at that because this episode might be the most packed episode I've ever done as far as like making sure to hit all of the imperative information that you need to get a really, really good foundation for what this thing is and what to do about it and why this thing is. Okay, so sit back. Don't relax too much. I need you to take some notes. I'll see you in the middle and I'll see you at the end. Enjoy. Codependency is at the root of so much of this stuff. And if you understand codependency along with your attachment style, especially if you're anxious, preoccupied, this is going to be so helpful for you. For me, when I went to therapy, I went to a therapist because the therapist that, like, if I'm talking about my therapist, like on, in a caption or something or on this, I'm talking about one particular woman who I've worked with for years. But before that, when I was like waking up to my issues. I didn't even know that they were called. I didn't even know what attachment was. I didn't know what attachment styles were. But I was waking up to my issues and I was literally, as most people do, like with my clients now, like if we do a free call or something, or even just in session, we're describing patterns. We're describing situations. And so that's what I was doing with my therapist at that time. And we literally did like just two sessions together because she gave me this key and it just made so much sense to me. And I honestly, at that time, I don't believe that I was ready to do the emotional processing behind codependency, but I needed to know what it was. And it gave me words and gave me language. It helped me to identify what was going on with me. It helped me to frame these situations. They weren't so mysterious anymore. I could give it a framework. I could put it in a framework. And when she said, I was describing a relationship that I had, it was bad. I mean, that was the worst relationship that I had, period. It was the worst. Okay. So I went to therapy after the fact and, I was so confused, so upset. But I realized I wasn't upset about the, and this was before I even got into the room. I wasn't upset about the person. I was upset about the experience. And I think that's going to make a lot of sense as we go through this work. And as I described it, and then she was listening. And of course, now that I understand what it's like to be on the other side, she knew from the beginning what it was. She let me talk. Okay. She let me talk and share it and act as if it was some like totally unique thing to me, as we often do, is we think that it's just us that's going through this experience. I'm the broken one and there's no one else like me. And it's just not true, which is another reason why I love this page and this work and doing group, because you realize that it's so many people. And so after she heard everything and we were talking and she said, do you know what codependency is? And I was like, no, I don't. And I'm crying. So when I just said it, I mean, it looked a lot different back then. So I'm crying like, I don't know what it is. And she described it. And I was like, oh, my God, that's it. like that's what it is. Like I the same kind of feeling that I experience, or rather the experience I have when I have clients, or even someone who doesn't become a client but who is able to hear a reflection of themselves and then say, that's it, that's exactly what it is. I had that experience, and many other times in therapy where I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally describes me. When she gave me that, and I think that she gave me a book recommendation, but from there, and I read the books and I started listening, I started reading, and I was like, that's it. So, hey y'all, good morning. Let's go ahead and get started then. That's just kind of how I came upon codependency and how it helped me to start to frame things. And that's why I'm excited to help other people understand it as well. So let's go ahead and get into it. We're going to talk about a couple different things. We're going to define what it is. Simple. It's going to be really simple. And then we're going to talk about, I have my notes right here. That's why I keep looking over here. We're going to talk about what it looks like. Then we're going to talk about what else it looks like. You'll understand what I mean by that. What does it look like? What else does it look like? The root cause and what to do about it. You ready? I'm excited. All right. So what is codependency? I define it as looking on the outside of me to stabilize something going on the inside of me. I need something external to stabilize me internally. If you Google it, I don't know, you're going to find other different, keep it simple. And if you take the definition I just gave you, it's going to make sense with every other kind of like elongated definition that you find. I need something on the outside of me to stabilize something on the inside of me. And what does that actually like look like or sound like? Could be something like this. And the thing on the outside of you might be in the form of a person or a thing. Okay. Coco, you know we getting warmed up. Y'all see Coco in the back? You know how she likes attention and she's cute. So y'all know how you cuties like a lot of, it's like when the attention's not on you. Coco, are you okay, babe? Now everything's fine because she got what she wanted. All right, so the thing on the outside of you could be in the form of a person or a thing, okay? And by thing, I'm really talking about substances especially, okay? So I'm looking on the outside of me to stabilize something on the inside of me that might be a person or a thing slash substance, okay? How does that sound? Okay, if it's alcohol, like a substance, I'm feeling anxious, this alcohol will reduce my anxiety. So the anxiety is what's happening on the inside of me. And if I take this drink, it will reduce the anxiety. If it's in the form of a person, ooh, I'm feeling lonely, this person will help reduce my feelings of loneliness. So I'm looking for something outside of me to take care of something on the inside. Keep it simple, okay? Keep it simple. So what does it look like? What does it look like in relationship? Big high, this is just one of them. Big highs and big lows, okay? Big highs and big lows. So when things are great, they're great. And when things are bad, it's worse than bad, okay? And if you've been in a codependent relationship, you know what I mean when I say worse than bad, okay? So big highs and big lows. When I have you, it's great. When I don't have you, it's terrible. Or if I feel disconnected from you, it's terrible. Why? Why would I feel this way? Because I perceive, if I'm the codependent person, I perceive that you have something that I need in order to function as an individual. In that state, I hope that you hear the contradiction in that statement. Hear the contradiction. I'll say it again. You have something that I need to function as an individual. So there is something I perceive that if I don't get it from you, then I am in a deficit. Makes sense? If I think that you have something that I need to function as an individual, to move in the way through the world that I would like to move, if you don't give it to me, and if you've got, I believe you have this missing piece, this thing that I need, and if you don't give it to me, then I am at a deficit as an individual. So what's the contradiction is that I'm an individual and therefore there's nothing literally in the world that I would need to add to me to become more of an individual than I already at my core am. Is anybody hearing this? Or are we just listening? Are we just, hello, can someone give me some, before I keep going, because there's a lot on here. This is only point number one, and there's literally three pages of notes here. So are we getting it? Can someone just say it in the comments while I take some of this coffee? Sheldon said, boom. That's all I needed, a boom. A little fire emoji, maybe, a little heart. I don't know. Okay. So why does it happen, these big highs and big lows, because I feel like you have something that I need in order to function as an individual, which means if you don't give it to me, if you don't give it to me, it's terrible. And if you give it to me, I've become fully satisfied. Okay. This perception, if you are the codependent one, and we're going to talk about the other side too. Oh, Ramina, am I saying it right? She said, all you're saying is so real. Girl, I know it. Lived it too long, okay? Too long. That's why I love helping people to get out of it, because it's a bunch of bullshit. All right, so what does that do? If I think that I need to get something from you in order to be fully satisfied, it motivates me to hang on to the relationship and to work to keep it out of the lows, because the lows are so bad that I am now naturally motivated to keep us out of that super low spot. So I'm over functioning, I'm overdoing, I'm always thinking about what I can do to make this relationship better. But why are those lows so low? Let's talk about that. All right, Ferris said, I definitely feel the highs and lows. She said, damn right. All right, so I'm hitting it, right? I'm hitting it. All right, so why are the lows so low? Because I feel like I'm in a deficit. Why are the highs so high? Because I feel totally actualized when you give me the thing that I think that I need from you in order to live as an individual, in order to be happy, okay? That the stakes are high. I want you to remember that. I want you to remember that. The stakes in a codependent relationship are so high because the value that you have injected into this dynamic, the value that you have assumed, that you have projected onto this relationship and in this dynamic, I need you for me. That means the stakes are really high, because if I don't get you, I lose a lot. Okay. I want you to remember that. And I also want you to remember that that is a perception. Okay. That is so important to remember. It is a perception. It is not real. It is a perception. It is not real. What did I say again? I like to repeat things because I think I have this teacher part of me. I'm like, repetition. Like, you got to like get this thing. And it's such a subconscious thing. That's why you got to hear this over and over and over again in different ways. Right. Remembering that what we said a couple minutes ago, that you came into this world as an individual, there is nothing that could be added to you to make you more of an individual that you are at your core. You've got to remember this, codependent people, please. Let's continue. We're still only on point one. This is about to get, I don't know how long I'm going to be here today. She said, my feet getting hot. Yeah, you better sit right there. Sit right there. Sit right there. This is literally only point number one, and we are already deep into it. All right. So if I'm motivated to hang on to the relationship, but when things happen as they naturally do, and I had to write this note because I could talk about this thing for 8 hours straight. I'm talking about straight. And when we finally do an in-person thing, we're going to be up all night. All right. When things happen as they naturally do in any relationship, it causes such anxiety, because the stakes are high, it causes such anxiety that you can't really handle it well, because your emotions have taken over, you're no longer to be able to communicate properly. Let's remember the trauma brain. This is so exciting. This is so exciting. Let's remember the trauma brain here, folks. When we feel triggered, and this is everybody, no one gets away from it. It's a function of the brain. It's just neurology. This is not a subjective opinion, okay? This is a fact. All of us, when we feel triggered, okay, right side of the brain goes up, left side of the brain goes down. Right side of the brain, we're thinking about emotions, imagery. We're thinking about visuals and sensations, okay? That includes like the pacing of this conversation, okay? My facial expressions, okay? The tone of my voice. That's the right side of your brain being activated. The left side of your brain, logic, reasoning, okay? Right side abstract, left side grounded, Okay, logic, reasoning, structure. All of us, this is the trauma brain, okay? When we feel triggered, our right side goes up, meaning I am more sensitive to sensations, visuals. What do I see? What do I feel in my body? What do I feel in the room? Okay, that is hyperactivated. I become ultra sensitive to that, ultra aware of that, and I become much less able to access the logical part of my brain. Okay, just in a nutshell, why does that happen? Well, think about it like this. And this is when you use like primal examples, it helps us to put this into really good perspective immediately, because that process of your brain is a primal process. Okay, meaning that before humans became civilized and developed, this part of your brain existed. Okay, your brain has only gotten bigger and better as time has gone on. But at the beginning, in the beginning, you always had this ability to fight, flight, freeze. Okay. Actually, I would say, to be more specific, you know, I like to be specific. I can't say at the beginning, because we had to evolve to realize that we needed a function of being able to escape things that would hurt us. Ooh. Okay. We have evolved to have this function in our brain to escape things that might hurt us. So when we are being chased by a lion, okay, if you are being chased by a lion, the goal is to escape. The goal is not to sit. The lion is coming. You don't have time to sit down and write out the blueprint. You don't have time to call your therapist and formulate a plan. You don't have, you got to escape. So sensation goes up. What do I feel? Physiologically, feeling fear. My heart is racing. My mouth is dry, right? The body is starting to shut down functions of the body that aren't necessary for survival. More blood goes to your legs so you can run. This is all real life. Google it. Your more blood goes to your legs so you can run. Your body knows what to do when it's in a time, when it's feeling fearful. Okay. So if you associate like relational conflict, for example, with trauma and fear, my right side hyperactivated, my left side super deactivated, my emotions have taken over and I'm no longer to communicate logic, reason, no longer to feel grounded. I can't communicate properly. So back to this point, when things happen in relationship as they naturally do, it causes in codependent people such anxiety that you can't handle it well because the stakes are so high, your emotions have taken over, and you're no longer able to handle this thing with logic and reasoning. So you play the keys. I do. I took piano lessons. Y'all see the keyboard in the back? I took piano lessons for years, actually. So, and interestingly enough, when I moved, they lost the piano stand. And I was like, I don't know if I would get another one. Like, where am I really going to put it? And I was feeling, a couple of weeks ago, I was feeling kind of ruddish. And I was like, let me go get the piano stand back. And now I play it randomly all the time and I really enjoy it. So just a little note, sometimes like it just takes some little things to bring it back up. All right. So y'all with me so far, right? Okay. Ooh, this is point number one. I'm going to be here all day with this. All right. And so I perceive a threat. My emotions go up. My logic goes down. I'm not communicating properly. That's trauma brain, right? And we've been hanging on to the relationship. Woo! Hey, Jamar. You've been on my mind. We've been hanging on to the relationship so tightly that bad things happen. When bad things happen, they're badder than bad. We've tried to control it so much, we're no longer acting naturally. It creates these big highs and big lows. Essentially, what I'm saying is we bubble up with resentment and then eventually we act pissed because we are. Okay? Codependent people, y'all the nicest ones in the bunch. That's why I love talking about nice people, because y'all the nicest ones. And that was me too. Just bending over backwards, above and beyond. And you will pride yourself on it and we pat ourselves on the back. Look at how much I'm willing to do for you when you didn't want to do it. Right? So the resentment bubbling up, you nice as hell, smiling on the outside and you're pissed. Okay, codependent people are great at that. So am I anxious, preoccupied. That's why these two things go together so well. We try to control the relationship so much, we're no longer acting naturally. So we have squeezed ourselves so small that we eventually implode and then explode. Okay, so I want you to think about it. Give you a visual. Think about it like this cup. Okay, let's say I really like coffee. Jamar said, this could be me, and he's anxious. Look, I'm going to break it down. Y'all might not like me after this one. Let's give you the visual. Let's say I really like coffee. I like coffee so much, I'm afraid Jamar might come through this phone and come and take it from me. And now I've destroyed, and if you're listening to the podcast, you can't see me doing this visual, but I'm holding a coffee cup and I'm squeezing it really tight. If I were to keep going, the coffee cup is either, it's going to burst from the bottom or squeeze out from the top and I lose my coffee. It actually literally just came out onto my pants because I wasn't handling the cup properly. I wasn't naturally drinking from my cup because I have fear that if I lose this coffee cup, something really bad is going to happen. And that's essentially what we do in relationships. Codependent people are so nice and so controlling. So nice and so controlling. And we try to squeeze this relationship. I need it to go my way. And if it doesn't go my way, I'm going to freak the fuck out. And then we break it. So something that I have to work with codependent people, anxious people often is first confronting your desire to control and literally practicing how to relax in relationship and within yourself. Okay. Would you all like to move on to point two? Wow. We're going to be here all morning. Okay. But obviously I'm going to cut this thing up into clips. So you're going to be able to hear it. And then it's also going to be on the podcast on Boundaries and Grace. And you're going to be able to download it to your phone, which is really exciting. Bree said, this is me. Well, girl, I'm about to really light your ass up here. Oh, I didn't mean to say that. I'm about to really light you up here. Okay. And everybody else. All right, the push, you ready to move on? She said, maybe. Well, yep. Well, hang tight. Here we go. Push-pull dynamic. What is it? So we're talking about what does it look like, okay? There's often a push-pull dynamic in codependent relationships. Here's what it might feel like, sound like in mind. I want you, but you're making me crazy. Both people, so the codependent person and the person on the other side, both people don't feel able to express themselves and often feel they have to become someone else to make the other person happy. Should I stop here? Both people don't feel they're able to express themselves and feel they have to become someone else to make the other person happy. There's little conversation about compromise. Conflicts are often more about getting your way, even when you're nice about it. I'll repeat myself. I'm going to repeat myself. Okay. What does codependency look like? A push-pull dynamic. I want you, but you're making me crazy. Both people don't feel able to express themselves and feel like they have to become someone else to make the other person happy. There's little conversation about compromise. Conflicts are often more about getting your way, even if you're nice about it. I want you, but when you're here, I'm stressed. I want you, but I feel like you're asking too much of me. I want you, but the compromises I'm not really sure about. So I'm going to push you away, push and pull dynamic. I want you. Okay, the anxious person usually like, I want you, I'm going to come up real close. And the avoidant person's like, yeah, but you're kind of infringing on my things. The avoidant person's like, I want you, you're giving me something that I'm not used to and that feels really good to me, but I'm not really sure what to do with it. Push-pull dynamic, I want you, but you're making me crazy. So if y'all remember, and oh my gosh, please don't let me, I'm too excited this morning. I am. I had a good workout. I did. And I got a bit maybe too hype, but the show You on Netflix, I need to do a whole thing on that show, because that's really, that will just, it's such a great extreme example of what it is. But so you can see, like, I made a post about like in codependency post with the you in the background. Cause I'm like, yes, these are people who have an extraordinary attraction to each other. And I also like, actually, and I don't really like a bunch of sex scenes now. I don't know if that's me getting old, but I don't really like a whole bunch of sex scenes on the TV. But what I actually like about it is it shows this like extreme, extraordinarily like high, like high in sex, right? But their normal life is like full of chaos and stress. And that happens a lot with codependent relationships as well. Is like this, when you're able to connect, it feels so gratifying. But when you're disconnected, I want to kill you. I want to kill you. Jay said, I'm gone. I'm past this chapter. Don't sit right there. Sit right there. No. You need to hear yourself. You need to hear yourself. You need to hear yourself so that you, because lest you forget, Sierra said it's also called the pursuer distancer dynamic. Yep. That's that push pull pursuer distancer. If you're talking about EFT, and if you're interested in EFT, that's emotionally focused therapy. And, the queen of the pursuer distancer dynamic, her name is Susan Johnson. So you can Google that name, Susan Johnson. A most savage gentleman, and I need to know what your name is. I see your thing. A most savage gentleman said, confession, I haven't watched You. If you watch You after learning about codependency, you will throw up in your mouth. It is so hard for, or is that just me? Like now when I watch these kinds of shows, I'm just like, oh my God, this is so toxic. Even Bridgerton, I couldn't even do it. I couldn't do it. All right, let's move on. What else does this look like in a person? In my anxious types, and you're the type that's much more likely to identify with codependency. In anxious types, it can look like obsession over the relationship. Rumination can sound like something like, what could I have done differently? You, especially going over conversations in your head, that's a big one. Going over conversations thinking, did I say something wrong? Did I trigger the other person? Is that why they're pulling away? And often attributing someone else's behavior to yourself. Obsession, rumination, difficulty making your own decisions. So it's not about what you want. It's about what the other person wants and what would please them. You can feel pushed and pulled by the other as if they are forcing your hand. That's a big one, y'all. He said, if I want sickening codependency, watch Vampire Diaries. I already know. That's like Twilight. Twilight, it's disgusting. Anyway, we could go on about pop culture codependency all day. Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez, for goodness sake. Remember that? I was talking about that with somebody last night. I was like, that was just bad. All right. Okay. So we might feel pushed and pulled by the other person as if they are forcing your hand. In reality, we are choosing to appease them and we just don't like it. I'm not saying you're aware of it because I definitely, if anybody knows that you can do these things and literally not feel like it's your choice, it's me. I mean, I didn't feel like I was choosing to appease somebody over myself. I've said this many times, especially lately. I didn't even know I had low self. I didn't know I didn't value myself. I didn't know, but my behaviors, it was obvious. I didn't know I had such low confidence. And that's often, it's difficult for people who are able to achieve functionally. Like you can functionally do things really well, but relationally we do things really poorly. It can be hard for us to see that it has a lot to do with our self-esteem, because we're used to getting patted on the back for functional things that we do, but relationally we're just eating shit. I mean, that's kind of what it is. In reality, we're choosing to appease them when we don't like it, but we perceive that they are forcing our hand as if they're making us suppress ourselves, as if they're making us give up what we want and need when that's not the case. We may neglect responsibilities in relationships, other relationships like your friendships, maybe family relationships, and may feel like your day revolves around the other person. Okay. We have incongruent feelings and affect. What does that mean? Incongruent feelings and affect, meaning that I feel one way. So we've already been talking about this, but this is just words for you, so you have language for it. What I feel on the inside is not what I show on the outside. That's incongruent. Incongruency, not the same. What's happening on the inside of me is not what shows on the outside of me. So again, go back to this idea that you can look nice, but you can be boiling inside. That's incongruent. Codependent people are really good at that. Can feel resentful of the other, does anything to please, and stays, even though you often think you shouldn't. Now, in most relationships, and those of you in relationships, you know that every once in a while, and at the beginning, first 6 months, first year, whatever, you might, you have some ideas like, I'm really not sure about this one. Like, I really don't know if we about, if this thing is about to work out. There are normal feelings of being uncertain in a relationship. Nobody just goes into it like, and they're like 100%. Like, I absolutely have no doubts. Like, if you're being realistic, like, I mean, geez. Right. There can be some feelings of hesitations or doubts, whatever. That's normal for so many people. Vast majority, 99.999%. I did the math. But what's not normal is often thinking that you want to leave the person. Hey, often feeling like this relationship isn't for me. That's a big red flag. Okay. So you can have some feelings of hesitations or even avoidance. But if you often feel like, this doesn't feel right, this doesn't look right, and also, I didn't even write this in my notes, but y'all know how I'd be going off the notes. If you feel, this is big with codependent relationships, you try to hide it from people who would tell you, who would advise you to do the healthy thing. You hide things from, you hide the dynamics of the relationship from people because you know in your heart that it looks crazy. You know it sounds crazy.
Look at Coco.
You know it looks crazy. You know it sounds crazy. And you don't want anybody else to know about it. Sometimes it's because we have shame about it. We have shame about it. And we know that someone would be like, Taylor, what are you doing? You deserve more than that. You should stop. And we don't offer the information to people who would advise us to do the healthy thing. All right, what else? You try to match your partner. So often if it seems like... you try to match your partner. Often if it seems that the other person is having a great day, you feel like you can have a great day too. And if they're having a bad day, you might feel like you need to have a bad day too. You match each other. And at the beginning, especially, it can feel romantic. It can feel romantic. It can feel romantic, like, oh my gosh, we're so in sync. But really, it's a sign of enmeshment, as if you can't have your own feelings and individuality away from the person. You have to match them in order to try to stay in sync. Often, and this is kind of like sex too. Often it feels like, oh my gosh, I feel so scared of being disconnected from you that I'll do anything to feel connected to you. So whatever you feel, I'll feel too, so that I have the illusion that we are for each other. But the reality is you had to contort yourself and hide parts of you in order to maintain the connection. That's the reality. That's the truth. Somebody needs to tell you. Okay. Here's the last one. You may feel the other person. I love this stuff. You may feel that I love it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, cause I don't, but you may feel, you have a perception that the other person needs you in particular. You have a perception that the other person needs you in particular in order to survive. These are so you have found a broken winged bird. Talked about that, I think, in the podcast. The last podcast episode. I don't know. Y'all know I got so many damn videos at this point. Something about some broken winged birds lately. It was recent. But basically, broken winged birds are what I call people who, they're usually low functioning people, or they just can't get their footing in their life. Okay. And then my codependent people are the bird collectors. You go and find them and you put them in your bird box. Okay. And you take them back to your little codependent lab and try to heal them up with your special magic. And that's the thing. Codependent people often have a perception that you are really unique. You are uniquely made for that person on the other side, that you are. And sometimes we think this, we feel this, believe that you're the only one that gets them, that they can only talk to you, that you're the only one with enough patience for them. You're the only one with enough empathy and compassion for them. And if you leave, they are not going to make it. So you make yourself indisposable. It's a perception. It's not reality. You are not the only one that understands them. You are not the only one that could deal with them. You are not the only one that can understand what they've been through. You are not the only one that has a similar traumatic past, trauma bonds. You are not the only one. Okay. But when we make ourselves the unicorn in their life, that it gives us more motivation to stick around. Because if I leave, who do they have? They don't even have to ask you for it. Am I right? Come on. Hello. the bird collector in that old bird box. Look, if you look back at my past, that my old bird box was damn packed. I had to get another bird box. I had a couple bird boxes. Everybody was just in the damn bird box. I was doing my thing. I was doing my thing, collecting those broken winged birds, looking crazy, tired as hell. So, yeah, you think you're a unicorn in their life, and if you leave, they're going to fall apart. Both people are enabling each other. This is just the nature of codependent relationships. Both people enable each other. But we're just talking about the codependent person this time, right? Right now. You enable the other person to stay small, okay? Because you are actually willing to do things that they could literally do themselves. This is so related to, this is so, y'all know I worked in addiction before. It's so related to addiction. We perceive that this other person, so the other person does not need to be an addict and neither do you, because it's the same dynamic. We perceive that the other person is in some sort of deficit in their life where they just can't pick themselves up. They just can't get ahead. And because your ass has so much damn energy. Hello, your ass got so much energy, right? Because you got such a helpful heart. And you're like, oh, well, you don't know how to love yourself. Well, I know love. I'll do it. I'll do it for you. You don't know how to depend on people? Depend on me. I'll show you. It's a mess. You don't know how to and it can be practical stuff too. Let me say this. Like if they don't have a job, right? These are the real bummy type of codependent relationship. Eventually, if you're lucky, you at least evolve in the codependent relationships. Like it just gets a bit better. But in the really bummy ones, they don't even do like the basic stuff. Like they might not have a job or a place to stay. This is not a judgment. I'm just going to say the facts. They might not have a job or a place to stay or a car, right? And you're like, I have these things. I have connections. I'll get you a job. I have a car. I'll get you to work. I have a family. You don't? Come with me. Home for the holidays. Broken wing, carrying that old box home, that broken wing bird box, right? You love to just take them with you wherever you go. Wherever you go, you taking your bird box with you. Yeah, no. So, stop. How are things going so far? You're enjoying it, right? Good, 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 good. Well, I just want to take a breather right here and let you know that there is a link in the show notes below to schedule a 20-minute free consult call if this stuff is making sense to you. Okay, so that link is there. You schedule the date and time, and I reach out to you on the phone to talk at that time. And so that's an opportunity for you to ask any questions, to get an idea of where you might need to go next, and to understand what your options are as far as working with me moving forward with this thing. Okay, so that link is in the show notes below. This is also the first pass around of the offering bucket. Yep. The first pass around of the offering bucket, which I collect in Cash App. And that is just an opportunity for you to support this work and to give back if you've been getting things from it. And I'm only asking if you've been getting something from this consistently. I'm talking about like if this has been really valuable to you and you've consistently been soaking up this information, then yeah, I'm asking for some support back. So that Cash App is Taychand, $TAYCHAND, and it's also written below in the show notes. So this is the first pass around of the offering bucket. I'll give you a moment to do that now. I'll wait. Another 10 seconds. We love giving and we love giving back. Yep. All right. So let's continue on with this episode. I'll see you at the end. Because it's not true. Again, so codependency is so in our mind. It's not true that you're the only one. You're not the unicorn. They don't literally need you to survive. No. And you need to work on your own desire to feel so, like such a savior in everybody's life. Uh-oh. Somebody getting triggered. Let's move on. In the other person. Y'all want to talk about the other person for a second? Let's take a break. Let's take a break from the codependent person because I don't know. It's hard to hear. But Jay said they can't reciprocate. We don't talk about reciprocation. We're going to talk about it. We're not, we're 35 minutes in and oh my God, still got more to talk about. Jay said they can't reciprocate the very little things. Trash. And we go right in the can and pull them out. Sure do. We're like, they don't know any better. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. They don't know how good this can be. Oh my God. I'm just going to, let me go get them because they probably like, oh my God. Oh my God. Where's my box? Where's my box? Let me go to the trash can and pull this bum out and ruin my life. Wait, I need a break. Let's keep going, y'all. This is fun. Self-awareness is good for you. All right. So in the other person, so we have a codependent person, and then we have the person on the other side. Okay. For the sake of this conversation, I'm just going to call them the other person. Okay. I'm not giving them a label. Yes, I am. They're usually avoidant and hyper independent, but you know, whatever. So codependent if you remember, like when I talk about attachment styles and we talk about interdependency, I just posted that video yesterday. Interdependency is this sweet spot in the center of codependency and hyper independence. So you're able to be an individual and you're able to be in a relationship. It's this sweet spot. Sometimes you lean a bit to either side. It's okay. You sway in the sweet spot. There's a range. Okay. It's not a bullseye. It's a range. On the one side, you have codependency. Hey y'all. And on the other side, you've got hyper independence. Interdependency is that sweet spot in the middle. So if you got a codependent person, they're often paired with a hyper independent person. They're usually avoidant. This person, what does it look like in these relationships? They can appear totally disengaged, only making decisions for themselves. Okay. So they're often defined or perceived as selfish, unwilling to be influenced by the other. They might, you might catch them saying things like, if you don't like it, that's your problem. This is who I am. If you don't like it, that's your problem, or you need too much or whatever. I will also say that, two people can be on the codependent side. Okay. Those aren't usually people who seek out help with their attachment style. So it's not usually two anxious people that are like, we need help getting out of this, because they're both willing to do that bullshit with each other. Seriously. Like they're both so anxious together that like they don't, one's not getting hurt enough. Put it like that. One, when it comes to like, when you end up calling me, when you end up scheduling the call, you're like, I've gotten hurt so bad. I don't want to do it one more time. That's common. I mean, I had to go through that too, right? Where you're like, I can't do this little thing. This little dance or circus thing. I'm not going to the circus one more day. It's over today. Okay. Anxious people don't typically, they don't have the same perception of a gap between them and their partner because they're so the same. Like they're enmeshed together. Whereas like when you have a codependent person and a hyper independent person, the codependent person ends up feeling so hurt that they're like, I need to do something. When you have two people on the anxious side, they're kind of like, this is uncomfortable. And I know that it's unhealthy, but we're both okay with it. Right. Like they're both hyper focused on the relationship. With the other type, one is disengaged. Okay. One becomes disengaged. And the other one's like, I don't like this. Makes sense. Yep, one has not been hurt enough. So y'all will just stay in it until Lord knows. I have some neighbors like that, actually. It is really bad. Today I heard them arguing. I was like, and they're like, they always appear so obsessed with each other. And right when I saw him, my brain was like, right when I met him, I was like, I already know what the fuck's going on here. It's just a matter of time. And they're just it was blowing up this morning. I was like, yikes. But they do everything together. And they seem so obsessed with each other. Super PDA. That's what like the two people on the codependent side, you'll do everything together. And you're like, oh my God, we're so in love. We're so the same. We're twins. Y'all even say that shit, right? Like we're twins. And then, and you are literally yelling at each other at 6 a.m. Whatever. Gosh, I don't even want to go down that path. We're really just talking about the one where there's a bigger gap. All right. So the codependent person is usually paired with someone, again, that codependent and the hyper independent person. Codependent person is usually paired with someone who needs someone over functioning in their life. Usually they are avoidant. They might also have an addiction to something like substance, work, or their bodies. It gives them an escape, something to care about that doesn't involve an emotional connection. Twins. Yeah, twins. Trauma twins. That's what I call y'all. Trauma twins. walking hand in hand to every damn where. You can't even go to the bathroom by yourself with that type. And I've experienced many bad different dynamics in different types of relationships. And I know what that feels like too. But again, though, usually I didn't even find the need to go to therapy after being in a dynamic like that, where it was like two anxious types. That was actually, I would say, the first unhealthy relationship. I didn't know it was a problem because I was like, we both were super into it. Right. But yeah, it's weird. We just don't actually think that we need help. Trauma twins. All right. Yeah. The codependent person, they're usually with someone who needs someone to overfunction. The person is usually avoidant and might have an addiction to something. I'm not saying they do, but might have an addiction to something like a substance, work, or their bodies. Gives them an escape, something to care about that doesn't involve emotional connection. They don't learn how to have an equal relationship with another human being. Hey, y'all. They don't learn to have an equal relationship with another human being. So they are able. And this is confusing for you people that are codependent, you people that are codependent, because you see them able to invest and pour into other parts of their life. Or, and this really pisses us off, let me tell you this one. I know this shit like the back of my hand. This is what really pisses us off. When you see them pouring into someone else that isn't as important as who you think you are to them. So you might see them pouring into relationship friendships in other states, other damn countries. You might see them pouring into their work and you're like, dang, you have so much attention for these other people. But what about me? I'm your person. I don't understand. And that also motivates you. Ooh, motivates you to try to get what you see them giving to someone else. But I want you to understand this, people, that it's not that they're able to do that because the other person doesn't require of them what a normal functioning intimate relationship requires of them. Work does not have to give them anything back. Work does not require them to be emotionally present. They just have to function. Friends in other states, and this will freak y'all out. Platonic friends, you'll see them giving them so much attention. They're planning their birthday 3 months ahead of time. And you're like, damn, you forgot about my birthday. But it's because the stakes are not as high for them. These are avoidant people. So when it comes to intimacy, they push it away. And so the people or the things that don't require intimacy from them, that don't require emotional availability, that don't require emotional connection and work that is required of any relationship, they are willing to enter into those types of relationships because they just don't have to do so much of their relational stuff. God. Mm-mm-mm. Mm-mm-mm. Stick to the notes. The codependent person feels worthless without getting the validation from the other, and the other person enjoys getting their needs met. The codependent person feels unimportant and devalued, so they keep working to get the validation. The other person motivates you by sometimes giving you what you want. That's called intermittent reinforcement. Hello, go back and watch some videos. Talk about that stuff. That's serious. You need to know what that means. The other person motivates you by sometimes giving you what you want, like intermittent reinforcement / breadcrumbing. If they show up, ooh, so y'all know how I be reading my own notes. I read my own notes and I'm like, oh my God. I wish someone had broke this thing down for me like this. If you show up, codependent person, this is going to save somebody's life. If you show up, let me get my words together. If they show up equally, Bree said, this describes my last relationship to a fucking T. I'm telling you, I know this shit like the back of my hand. And I almost don't like that I do, because y'all, I've been in this. It's a mess. Okay, if the other person, that hyper independent person, if they start showing up equally, you might stop. That's why they don't do it. Well, part of the reason why. They at least subconsciously, I'm going to give them a pink flag. I'm not going to say they're doing it on purpose, because a lot of times this is unconscious stuff. And often, seriously, these people don't actually want to be this way. That's really at the core of the issue. I'm not really going to talk about that today, but a lot of times people don't want to be this way. They don't want to be perceived this way, but they unconsciously and automatically do it, just like you keep clinging to them. So give them the same grace. Okay. You know how we're like, oh my God, I just can't stop being attracted. I just can't stop having sex with you. I just can't stop going on dates with unavailable people. Oh my God, I can't stop picking up the phone. The same way that you do unconscious automatic things that you don't like, understand, this is going to help you to move on without all of the resentment. Understand, please, that the other people on the other side also have unconscious automatic patterns that they too would like to drop. Okay? It's just that the codependent anxious people, you're more likely to flag it. Is what it is. All right, so if they show up equally, you might stop because you won't be as motivated to keep overworking for them and meeting all of their needs. So they can't, think about it like this, they can't even risk being reciprocal with you because you actually, you get, I don't want to say turned on, aroused. I'm going to say aroused, and I don't mean sexually. But I mean excitable, like it makes us feel like there's something for us to do, okay? When someone is so distant that it not forces, but it triggers us, that's an important distinction, triggers us to do the fucking most to come and get you. I need to come and get you. That means if they step forward, you do less. You all of a sudden have to do less to meet their needs. You all of a sudden have to exert less energy. Understand, they enjoy the energy that they get from you sprinting to them. Every damn day. So they can't even risk showing up for you because you might get less motivated because we're unhealthy, right? In a healthy relationship, when the other person comes forward, we don't lose. And it's like, okay, great. We're moving together. Those are people in sync trying to make the relationship work. But when we are unhealthy, you might claim if you're like me, if you're like the way that I was, so I know that we exist, and you are so attracted to people that do this shit, when they actually, if you've ever, you might experience someone being like, I might be able to do that for you, Taylor. I might be able to start reaching out to you more. And now all of a sudden you're losing interest. Why? Because compelled by the dysfunction. Let me stay on my notes. Let's move on. We're almost done. I wanted this to be 30 minutes. It's not. Bree said, I'm seeing a lot of woozy faces today. I'm seeing a lot of those faces. Bree said, how can you be codependent in one relationship and then avoid it in the next? Essentially, I'll just answer that question real quick. It's just a dysfunctional. Let me get my words together. Yeah, so it's almost like, so that question, how can you be codependent in one relationship and then avoid it in the next? Basically, think about it like this. I just have difficulty relaxing in love. Put a period on it. I have difficulty relaxing in love of just existing insecurity, existing instability, existing in interdependency. So that's why we can be anxious and in one relationship and avoid it in the other. Basically, we're just avoiding happiness. Shit. Basically, we're just avoiding happiness. And we just get good at it. So you'll do, oh God, I could just talk about this. So you'll do whatever to avoid it. So if the person is, and I've talked about this before, I'll talk about it every day, all the time. If your function is to avoid stability, right? If your goal is to avoid just existing with somebody in healthy relationship, then when you get an avoidant person, you are willing to be anxious. If you get an anxious person, you're willing to be avoidant because I'll just do whatever to sabotage the relationship and just stay away from intimacy. I have a bad relationship with intimacy. So I'll avoid when I need to. I'll be anxious when I need to. You're fearful avoidant. Power, body, soul. Which is the I hate you, don't leave me attachment style? Fearful avoidant. That's exactly what we're describing. All right. So we're going to talk real quick about root causes and then what to do about it. I just tore this thing up. Sounds like borderline personality. Stretch, but okay. I mean, yeah, it could be in the ballpark, could be. But I stay away from borderline personality disorder, just like I stay away from narcissistic personality disorder. Like any people can hear this and think narcissism. You haven't heard me say the word once because I just avoid it. But yeah, it could. If people get into the borderline or narcissistic things, you can see some similarities for sure. But that's it's a diagnosis. It's not a set of character traits. We're talking about traits here rather than a diagnosis, but different. All right. So root causes. Basically, I'm going to keep it basic because there are different details of people's situations that can be at the root of codependency. So just like how when Brie asked, why is it that I might be codependent on one relationship and avoidant on the other? We could talk about the details, but I just gave you what the core is, right? So here, I'm just going to give you the core. Root causes of codependency: dysfunctional family dynamics, where needs and individualism were not expressed or validated. Dysfunctional family dynamics, where needs and individualism was not expressed or validated. Individualism, meaning in this context, I am one person and you are another. I can be me and you can be you, and we can exist together, okay? So needs likely did not get met. Needs did not get met, or you have the perception, right? Doesn't matter which. Needs did not get met. So the codependent is wildly optimistic and hopeful that they can go get a met by somebody. Somebody gonna do it. And the enabler is wildly cynical. Both fear not getting their needs met. So the codependent person is almost like developing like a scent for it. Like, I'm gonna get that reassurance, right? I'm gonna get that reassurance. I'm gonna do whatever I need to do to get it. Unfortunately, we find people who mirror where we first had this issue, which are people who can't actually do it. So it's not the fact that you need reassurance or validation that's the problem. It's the fact that you seek people who are the exact ones that can't do it for you. That's the problem. Okay. And why does that happen? You need to talk to me one-on-one about that, or, you know, that's it. Go to therapy and I just don't have time to talk about like why we mirror those things, but I often talk about it like on videos and stuff. So needs do not get met. The codependent can be wildly optimistic and energized to go get that need met. And the enabler might be wildly cynical, but both fear not getting their needs met. So the anxious codependent person, I fear not getting my needs met. So I'm scared that when you have a slight regression in the relationship or we have a slight dip in our connection, I'm freaking out. Okay. And I need to come. I have so much energy to go get it. And I'm optimistic that you got it. And I need to come get it from you. And the enabler can be wildly cynical. Okay, so both might not have gotten their needs met, but the enabler has given up. That hyper-independent person might have given up even feeling like they could be met, and the anxious person is so obsessed with getting it met. But both of them have a dysfunction to the literal thing of the needs. One, I gotta have it or else, and the other, I won't get it, so forget about it. Another root cause, addiction's really big with this. People that grew up in families in active addiction, whoever might have been the addict, super common for codependency to come out of that. There's a lot to say about why, but think about it. Like if you're just gonna walk away with a nutshell, someone, a parent especially, who is in active addiction is inconsistent. Period. There's no question about it. There is no good. You know, someone's like, I'm a good drunk driver. There's no such thing as a good drunk driver, because drunk driving is bad. Like, there's no such thing as like a healthy addict. Okay. It's just unhealthy. Like, it's not a subjective opinion. It just doesn't work out. Consistency and addiction don't go together. If you're in active addiction, you are also inconsistent. I don't need to know who you are or who your mother is to know that there were inconsistencies in their mood, in their behaviors, probably not able to hold a job for a long period of time. So switching up jobs, might have different gambling thing, right? So just inconsistencies. You don't know basically, who am I going to get today? Who am I going to get today? So these adult children end up being hyper-vigilant in their relationships and ultra-attuned to their partner's needs. You first usually think that it's romantic and like you're like a super partner. Like, oh, I know exactly. I can read my partner's mind. I just know. I can. You're really good. You're almost disgustingly good at anticipating other people's needs. You're good at it in your romantic relationships. You're good at it in other at work. You're so good at picking up what somebody needs and delivering it. Okay. Yes, you're the super partner, and it can sound romantic, and we want to pat ourselves on the back, when really you're just hyper attuned to what other people's needs are, because you're afraid of the consequences of what happens if you don't do it. You're afraid that they'll leave you if you don't do it. You're afraid that they're going to think you're worthless or say something crazy to you if you don't go above and beyond to meet their needs. Usually because if the family was an addiction, you had a parent or parents in addiction,
Okay. Even if the attic, if the attic was in and out, okay, they don't have to have lived with you in the house, but having to predict what this person's going to do today, or if they're going to show up for Christmas, if they're going to pick you up from school, right? You don't know if they want you to, some people, you know, like, do they want me to hug them when I come in the door, or do they want me to stay away? You have a hard time figuring out what is my role here. So then you become an adult. Oh my God, we could talk about this all day. Become an adult who now in your adult romantic relationships, I'm worried that my partner's mood, they might change their mind about me tomorrow, even though they told you they loved you yesterday. Right? You might be afraid, like, okay, like, you know, when you gave them a gift and they liked it, and you're afraid that you got to do more to keep the energy up, rather than being like, they just liked it, period. Like, you don't have to keep doing in order to keep them in their good. That's control. It's actually us trying to get some control over the situation, right? I want to control your perception of me. So I'm going to do everything you want me to do so that I can more likely guarantee that you walk away with a good idea of who Taylor is. Meanwhile, suppressing the whole time what I really want, what I really need, or that you've been bothering me, that I don't like you coming home and drinking. I don't like when you cheat. Shit like that. That's how it manifests in relationships. Serious. Okay. Oh, Lord. Just this one note on this. It cracks me up reading these damn notes. All right. So a parent does not have to be in addiction in order to develop those same traits, right? Like, I do not have a family in addiction, but I had a lot of those traits as well. So it's not, they don't have to be an addiction. That's just really, just really commonly paired with those kinds of traits. It also might also be that your parents or parent was emotionally immature or distant, which is actually true of people in addiction too, right? They're emotionally immature. I need to look for something on the outside of me to handle what's on the inside of me. And they're naturally distant in addiction. They're escaping all the time. So they don't have to be in addiction. But with that hypervigilance thing, I want you empaths to reflect. That's a nice way to put it. I want empaths and people who identify as empathic and highly sensitive, I want you to reflect. Is it really that you think about it like this? If I naturally am intuitive, if I'm naturally sensitive and empathetic, as let's just talk about Taylor, as I am, right? Me being that does not create in me a compulsion to be responsible for your life. Me being intuitive, empathetic, and sensitive does not trigger anxiety in me to take care of whatever I might pick up is going on with you. So that's more likely means that we're in the clear, okay? If it is compelling you to take responsibility for what someone else has going on, you feel like you cannot help but to reach in and take care of their problem, I am challenging you to stop identifying as empathic and highly sensitive and start thinking about if you're just really scared and hyper vigilant. I'll leave it at that. Dang. All right. What to do? If you're the codependent person, learn to express your feelings. Learn to identify your feelings and learn to express your feelings. Often, like, if you're the codependent person in these types of relationships, you just know that something doesn't feel right, but you're not really sure why. Like, if someone says, do you feel guilty? You're not really sure. Do you feel resentful? You're not really sure. Do you feel happy? You're pretty sure it's not that, but you're not really sure what it is instead. So you have to be able to identify what your feelings are. Journaling is really, really, really helpful for that. Checking in with yourself. I recommend using a feelings wheel. If you're not used to the whole feelings thing, if it makes you uncomfortable, Google feelings wheel. They're all over the place. The one that I use with people that I share with others is the one by Calm. The app Calm, like Calm and Headspace, Calm. I really like their feelings wheel. I like the colors on it. So that's why I like it. So use a feelings wheel. Create space for yourself in the relationship. So, like, being able to maintain your own schedule. Yes, for the feelings wheel. Being able to maintain your own schedule. Able to maintain your own hobbies, other relationships like friendships, creating space for those things and sticking to it, right? So, like, if I have plans with Brianna and I'm with Dave is my partner. I have plans with Brianna on Tuesday. And Dave texts me on Tuesday morning and says, hey, I got freed up with work. I'm wondering if you want to go to dinner. I would say, hey, I would actually love to do that, but I have plans with, what did I say her name was? Brianna or something. I got plans with Brianna, but I can't do this, but I can do that. I can do Thursday instead. Okay. So being able to maintain your own thing, not feeling compelled to give in, not feeling compelled to give in. And also with that, and I used to do this thing, don't leave open, don't avoid planning, scheduling things when you don't actually have plans with that person. Like I would literally hold like open space in the calendar in my schedule, like just in case like they were able, and because I was with people who were like avoidant, they would like avoid making those kinds of commitments. So it would leave me in anxiety. Like, am I going to see this person this weekend or not? And I'll just leave the space just in case, right? Rather than making that space, opening it up and inviting people in who actually actively want to be in that space and giving using that space for them. So able to maintain your own hobbies and schedule and other relationships is really important. Saying no when you want to say no and yes when you want to say yes. It sounds so simple. It's not. If you're dealing with codependent issues, saying no when you want to say no and yes when you want to say yes is not easy. And so with that, I need you to talk, because I know that it's not easy as it sounds, right? I want you to apply this next point too. I need you to learn your physiology. A lot of us, when we're in codependency, we don't actually know. We don't know what boundaries are. We don't know where they should be. We don't know what the function is. It's a mess, right? I know. So this is why I always, every single time, 100% of the time, advise people who have that issue is to learn your physiology. What I mean by that is I need you to feel and notice and feel what it's like when you feel uncomfortable, when something feels intruded upon, when you start to feel angry, sad, resentful, like you want to disengage, when you start to feel passive aggressive. I need you to slow down and learn your physiology so well that when that feeling happens, you know there's something Taylor's not saying. You're making a request of me, or you're saying something about me, or something is happening in a moment that Taylor doesn't agree with, that Taylor doesn't want to do, that Taylor doesn't align with. And I need to learn what that feels like. Do I feel like I want to shrink? Do I feel like I get quieter? Do I feel like my heart is racing? Do I feel like shaky? Do I feel like I can't eat? What is it for you? Everyone has their own thing. I need you to learn what that is. And learning those internal signals are going to direct you to where your no's are, to where your no is. Okay. Those internal alarms are telling you where there should be a boundary, but there's not. Okay. I need you to know what those things are. It's almost like if you were, you know how like in those spy movies and stuff, there's always those like red lines that go across the thing, like that go across, they're like sneaking in, they're going to go rob a bank, like Ocean's 11 or something. And then there's those like red, like laser beams going across and they're like trying to duck and dive. Right. And they're, so if they were, actually, I think that did happen, like in Ocean's 11, 12, or 13, where they had to learn it and the guy had to remember where the lines were. And so like they showed the scene where there were no beams. He's just like going off of where he knows the lines are. How difficult is that? How hard? That's like how we're living our life and expecting somebody else to live with us, is we don't actually put the wall up and say, this is not the wall, a boundary. Put the line in place, make it visible, make it known, so that not only do you know where you feel safe, but the other people know how to treat you too. Okay, because we can't, codependent people, hello, we cannot keep expecting people to, they don't know where the line is, and you want them to twist and turn and not touch your hot buttons, but they don't know where they are. They don't know what they are. Okay, and now we're upset. Now we're calling Taylor. It's funny, in all these videos, it's like I'm trying to get y'all to call me less. That's my goal. I want to be out of a job. I want to be out of it. I want people to just be like, I don't have anything else to do because I've put all my lines in place. I know my boundaries. I don't need you anymore, Taylor. That's my goal with every single person I work with. I want you to need me. Not at all. I don't want you to need to call me for anything. I want you to know where your lines are. Hello? All right. So I want you to learn your physiology and then I want you to go to therapy. Hello? I want you to go to therapy. For goodness sake. Please don't try to keep piecing these videos together. This is not processing. This is not processing. This is learning. Okay. This is you. This is like a blueprint. Okay. Think about it like this. I'm like an architect. I'm like the architect. You came to me and you're like, I know what I want to build. Right. This is architecture, the architecture piece. The building isn't there. You just have a plan. All right. I need you to design that shit. And you got to do that at an individual level. Okay. Because a lot of people would like an 8-bedroom house with 7.5 baths, but they ain't going to like it all decorated the same. And that's kind of like what your internal world is. Everybody wants a healthy relationship. I know that. Everybody wants good communication. I know that. But what's going to work for Dave and Brianna to communicate well is different than what's going to work for Anna and Kendrick. Okay. And the boundaries that Christian has are different than the boundaries that Jamel needs. Okay. And the issues that either has in placing those boundaries, the roadblocks, the potholes, the walls are unique to you. So everybody needs healthy boundaries, but the difficulties in setting them, for example, are individual for you. You need to get out your individual details out in therapy and process through that. This is not that. Okay. This is not that. This is me helping you get the structure in place. And then you need to go take that idea and go to somebody and say, hey, I know I need healthy boundaries. Okay. I know that I don't want to be codependent anymore, or I don't want to be hyper independent anymore. I want interdependency. Okay. I know that I want to be able to identify and express my feelings. Okay. Now, how does Taylor do that? How does Jamel do that? Okay. And that's why you need to do this on an individual level. And you can't just watch these damn videos. Although I do like the videos. All right. Last thing. If you're the other person, if you are the hyper independent person, earlier I did call that person an enabler, but both people are actually enabling each other. So it's a bit, just note that. Okay. I said enabler earlier, but both people are enabling. Just like how anxious and avoidant people are both anxious, but we just call one anxious because the other one doesn't look anxious. Same kind of little mix up. All right. So if you are the hyper independent person, Lord knows I need you to practice trust. Please for yourself. Can you practice trust? Can you practice giving? Can you practice vulnerability? And that kind of stuff. These are skill sets. Okay. You're not broke. I understand this. If you find yourself either swinging this way or normally in the state of hyper independence, you're not broken. You are a human being like all the rest of us. You are made for connection. Okay. You are made to relate. That's what you do. And just because you might be bad at it doesn't mean that that's not who you are. And I don't, and all this like, well, vulnerability. Ew. I don't know. Is that really necessary? Yeah. Yeah. And usually it's not that you don't want to do it. It's that you're scared to do it, but you want to act cool and calm and collected because you just don't know how. So I need you to get okay with your incompetence. Yes, incompetence. Just like my anxious codependent people need to be okay with how they have difficulty being an individual away from the relationship. I need you to understand you are incompetent in that area so that you can strengthen the skills. But again, incompetence speaks to skill, which means that these are skills that you can learn. Okay, this isn't a throw in the towel situation. You can learn this stuff. You can practice this stuff. You can practice trust. Yes, like you didn't just come out here like broken. Okay, you can rebuild these things. Practicing trust, giving and being secure in it. Like not as if, especially if you're hyper independent, you usually feel like someone's trying to take advantage of you or like they're there for the wrong reasons. I need you to practice giving without all of that negative expectation and perception. I need you to practice vulnerability, being able to identify your feelings and express them and then stay right there. Right? Because my avoidant people, sometimes what y'all want to do, you want to express your feelings and then block somebody immediately. No. No more. You have to start saying this stuff and sitting right there. Sit right there and feel how uncomfortable it is. I mean, both of y'all going to be looking at each other, uncomfortable and scared as hell. And that's how we build trust. That's where we build relationship, is when we're looking at each other like, damn, this is hard. And we're both not going anywhere. So what do you want to do? Okay. I need you to practice bringing someone else in. I need you to practice validation and empathy. Not for other people, for yourself, dummy. I need you to practice validation and empathy for you, crazy. All right. I need you to start seeing that your needs are real and important. You're not out here. If you're on that hyper independent avoidance side, too many of y'all, too many of y'all talking about you don't got feelings. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And that's why when we start talking about this, you start crying. Seriously. And I don't say that in judgment. I mean, that's real. When I talk to so many people, I love having avoidant clients because y'all be like, well, I don't really have feelings. I don't really feel anything. And then when we start breaking this stuff down, there they are. Where were they before? Right there. I didn't create them. Listening to this stuff doesn't create that in you. It already was there. So I need you to start validating yourself. Start being like, damn, I do feel lonely. Damn, I do feel like I need to talk to somebody. Damn, I do feel like I want a hug. Damn. It can sound as crass as you want. I don't care what identifying your feelings and expressing your feelings sounds like at first. I just need you to do it however it comes out. And it might not be pretty. And it might be pretty basic. Sometimes it's just, I feel sad or I feel happy. And it's just recognizing that you have different faces of yourself and that you are still whole and okay, just like that, regardless of which face is showing itself in that moment, that all of it is what makes you you. And so you can be all of it. You can be all of it, that you have needs that are important because you act like you don't have them, but it's usually because you think that nobody's going to meet them. And usually someone in the past really didn't. And that's been sticking with you and you feel hurt and you feel upset and you're carrying that memory of having a need and someone else didn't have what they said that they had for you, or that someone didn't have what you felt entitled to get, like from a parent. Someone didn't have it and it hurt. And you've been carrying that shit around. And I'm not minimizing it. I really mean it's bullshit. I don't like it for you. I don't like it for you. I don't like it for you. But we just got to be like, damn, it happened. And now we need to start dealing with the grief of the loss, the grief of not having it, so that we can be like, okay, I did need something there. I did need it. I've been making hyper-independent, avoidant people. I've been making myself believe it wasn't important, but that's because I didn't think I was going to get it. It's because I was afraid you didn't have it for me, but it's not that I didn't want it. And it's not that I don't need it. It's that I'm afraid I wasn't going to get it. Or if I did get it, I don't know how to sustain it. I don't know how to be the person on the other side to reciprocate. I don't know how to give, and I'm coming off as selfish when I want to be generous, but I don't know how to give it to you. It makes me feel scared. It makes me feel vulnerable. I feel like I'm losing something. I feel like I'm losing myself. Hello, please. So y'all, this was a really fun hour and 15 minutes. This was a really fun hour and 15 minutes. I have to literally make myself stop right now. I have clients. I have people who've already decided that they want to do something different. So I have to go talk to them. And this episode is going to be on Boundaries and Grace. So that's on Apple and Spotify. It'll be up on Thursday. Please subscribe, write a review, do something. Thank you, Chocolate Bunny. She said, I'm so happy I found you. Appreciate it. I'm happy you found me too. Can you leave a review, some stars. Okay. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine, but you better cash at me, $ Tay Chand, because I know it's helpful. So, and here's the thing, y'all. And I know people are probably going to leave right here in this moment, and that's fine. Leave. But I'm going to say this. If you keep going through this shit, trying to go through this healing stuff, picking up scraps off the internet and not pouring something back, I hope you get what you deserve. I hope you get what you deserve. I hope the best for everybody, but everybody's going to get what they deserve. And if you don't start pouring back in to where you are constantly pulling from, you'll get what you deserve, just like everybody else. Not because I wished it on you, but because that's how the world works. So good luck. Good luck, y'all. I will see y'all every day. Bye. Have a good one.